morning, everybody. Thank you. Just needed something to put my paper on. That's perfect. Good morning, everyone. Happy Mother's Day to all you beautiful mothers out there. I know there's quite a few mums sick or are home looking after sick children today. So my heart's with you, and I really pray that you out there, if you're watching, are able to have still a special Mother's Day, because yeah, you deserve it. I wanted to just pray and hope that you're able to reflect on either your own mother today, or the various mothers that have played a role in your life today, or being loved by your own family today in some way, if you're a mother yourself. And, you know, for me, I really love to celebrate the mother figures, the pastors, friends, all of which have impacted in the way we see the world, respond, grow, care, create and love. I'm sure, all experienced many aspects of mothers in our life. And for me, my own mother, I think whenever I'm up here, I talk about her. She was always strong, loving. She was a great cook. She was very faithful and stoic. And I'm really thankful for the way in which she mothered me. And my mum's been gone 11 years now. And I'm really grateful for everything she gave me. Every Mother's Day, I get together with my brother and my sister, and we have a meal together and we celebrate her life. That's how we do it. So, I grew up with a great mum and I thought I had it all together. Didn't really. So as I embarked on my own motherhood journey, I was living on a farm far northwestern Victoria with my husband, who happens to be away at the moment, and our four children. So I have four children. My son is here, and actually, I should just say, I've just become a grandma, and which means my son's become an uncle. I feel like our whole family's been rebranded. We've had a change of name. I'm a grandma, he's an uncle. I've got two daughters who are aunties, grandpa. So rebranded family the last couple of weeks, so that's exciting. I think during that time on the farm, I began to feel the weight and the burden of the role. Started to recognise it's not as easy or as idealistic as one would hope it to be, and started to question many things. You know, was I loving well enough? Was I disciplining well enough? Did my children feel safe? Were they dressed well enough? Was our home good enough? And really it wasn't, it was pretty old. But we're hit with those sort of disappointments and stresses, and constant strain, I felt upon myself the pressure to have it all, to be it all. I felt that I needed to know it all. I needed to be the perfect mother, wife, daughter, citizen, everything. It was a pressure to have it all at once. And if I didn't, I failed. It was in my my mid-30s, and I was blessed with some incredible women in my life at the time. My own mum, I lived a distance away from my own mum, but I was in a great little community church at the time and had wonderful kind of mothers around me who were great. They gave me great mothering tips, recipes, sleeping tips, routine tips, and encouragement, all of which I so valued and so needed at the time. It was really changed the way I approached my mothering. I know now we have Mother Google, but at the time we didn't have that. But at the time also, during a bit of a flat season in early to mid-30s, when I was sort of hit with all this kind of sense of almost a bit of disappointment, and I'm sure it was probably one of the mothers in my church, shoved a heap of books under my nose and just said, come on, you need to just start getting in, do some reading and just have a shift. And so one of the books that was given to me, and I'm sure many of you would know this if you've been a Christian for a long, long time, a book called Redeeming Love. Now, how many of you have read Redeeming Love? Yeah, I see a few hands. How many of you read it more than once? Yeah. It was a pretty impactful book around sort of 15, maybe 20 years ago, and still in copy and everything. Very popular book at the time. And the book was based on the book of Hosea, and Hosea being called to marry a prostitute. And it's an allegory. And the book was a beautiful book, beautiful, as you know. I think Francine Rivers was actually maybe a romance noveler writer before she became a Christian. So there's definitely a romantic thread through the whole story. But for me, there was a line that really changed the trajectory of the way I had to approach life and had to approach the way I was doing life as a mum. So if you don't mind, I'm going to read a little bit. And it's chapter 9. And I actually did a little shout out a few months ago because I couldn't find the quote. So Sujatha's not here, but she researched and found it for me because she'd read it like 5 times. So thanks, Suji. So I'm just going to read a little extract. On the way back to the cabin, Michael showed her where he wanted to put a grape arbor. We'll sit beneath it on hot days. There's nothing smells better than grapes ripening in the sun. We'll add a bedroom and a kitchen and put a porch on the west side. So we can sit in the evening and watch the sunset and the stars come out on hot summer afternoons. We'll sip apple cider and watch our corn grow. And children someday, God willing. Her stomach dropped. You've enough work to plan out for a long while, she said. Michael tipped her chin and looked straight into her eyes. It'll take us a lifetime, Mara. I went, oh, it'll take us a lifetime. I just stopped dead in the tracks when I was reading that. It'll take us a lifetime. Sorry, I'm a bit emotional. I was hoping not to be. It was as though I was caught in a broken record at that moment. I reread and reread that line, and it would just permeate me. It will take us a lifetime. What's a lifetime made up of? A lifetime of seasons, of summers, autumns, winters, and springs. A lifetime from infants, sleepless nights, the soccer mum life, the cooking, the endless cleaning, the washing, the working, the dreaming, the restoring, the building, the tearing down, the leaving home, returning home. My son's returned home. It's really nice. Son-in-laws, which I now have, and grandbabies. The recognition that motherhood is a lifetime journey, and the lifetime continues. And, you know, from the kind of mum my mum was, and her words still resonate in me in the way that I mother, and my mother-in-law, because I was very close with my mother-in-law for over 20 years on the farm, really impacted the way I did my mothering. And that wisdom I really valued, although I don't think I received overly well always. But I began to orientate my life differently from then on and approach things in a way as a lifetime and to see things broader than the moment that I was stuck in right now. A lifetime full of seasons. You know, there were seasons of tiredness, there were seasons of bewilderment, seasons of helping my children learn to read, learn to ride bikes and to play in sporting teams. There were seasons of helping, of abundance, like great abundance on the farm and joys, and of disappointments and fatigues. seasons of external demands, seasons of hard work, and seasons of spiritual dryness. And they all came within my life. And, I think it's been really interesting that we've been through a time of looking at our seasons and rhythms in the church. I think it's amazing. And actually, a few weeks ago, Caleb actually read a quote, which I was like, oh, I wanted to use that quote. But it's been a few weeks, so I think I can. but it was just, again, that reiteration for me of how to approach life in seasons and rhythms. And the quote comes, well, it's this. Electric lights seeking artificial day so the whole machine can labour without ceasing. But remember, no living thing lives like this. There are greater rhythms, seasons of hormonal cycles and sunsets and moon rides, and great movements of the seas and the stars. We're part of the creation story, subject to all its laws and rhythms. To surrender to the seas and the stars and flowering and dormancies is to savour the secret of life itself. Many scientists believe we are hardwired like this, to live a rhythmic awareness, to be in and to step out, be engrossed and then detached, to work and then to rest. It follows then the commandment to remember the Sabbath, like we've been talking about. It's not a burdensome requirement for some law-giving deity. You ought, you better, you must. But rather a remembrance of a law that is firmly embedded in the fabric of our nature. It is a reminder of how things really are, the rhythmic dance to which we unavoidably belong. And I was really struck by that because, again, it just reiterated how we can either fight against that rhythm and push against it, or actually become a part of the rhythm of our life and the seasons and being aware of that. When we understand, For me, it was one thing to realise a lifetime, but to recognise we're given lifetime of years, of weeks, days and seasons, and every season is preceded by a season and followed by another season. So I'm a farmer, been a farmer for a long time, even though I'm not on a farm now, I still am a farmer, and understand so well that seasons are essential. We can't not farm without a seasons. So we sow in autumn, the winter rain comes and germinates the seed. The spring and the warmer days cause the growth essential for the bearing of fruit. And the fruit and the seed, for us it was seed, fills out. The summer comes, the late spring and the early summer comes, and the crop is ready for harvest. No season can be in and of itself. We need every season in our life. It needs to have the preceding season for it to be productive for the season that is now. When we understand our life is in seasons over a lifetime, it really calls me to recognise how much we... there's no need for fear, even in the sense of where we feel like we're at right now. In Proverbs 31, I thought I can't not do a Mother's Day talk without speaking of this wise woman. And in verse 21, it says, "When it snows, she has no fear, for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet." You know, we've all had this where the winter seasons come and the snow, and I think often it can feel like a blizzard and we can't even see our hand but in front of us. It can be so thick and heavy. But there's no fear, and it really challenged me that in those seasons we can feel a lot of fear because it feels so heavy. But she prepared the seasons before, and she prepared in seasons of, you know, the spiritual growth, you know, her work in the productive sees her ready for the bleak seasons ahead that inevitably come into our lives. And, you know, and I was thinking about our children at this time and even the culture and the pressure of culture that our children face. Like, it can be a really hard winter season that we can face as parents, and we don't want it, and we think we've done all the best we can, but we still kind of hit it. But I've really learnt not to fear those seasons, because everything, all the preceding seasons have been done, and they'll be okay. And I need not fear. There's just so much wisdom in that line. You know, the scarlet spoken about does represent the blood of Jesus shed for the cleansing of sins of all mankind. And that's where our households are. We know that, and we've done that preparation. Wandering prodigals returning because of the preparedness of seasons from before. Our mothers from all aspects of life have joined in preparing us for life, a lifetime and a lifetime full of seasons. So I just encourage everyone to really recognise that in your life. And I know in even our life group, it's just organically we've been talking about that and recognising that more and more. So I'll just finish with another scripture. There is a lifetime for everything, and a life and a season for every activity under the heavens. You know, there's a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to rebuild, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. We recognise that in our lives, we have got times, and it's not, everything is not in all at once. We have this lifetime, this beautiful lifetime of seasons in front of us. And none of this is done in our time frame of what we think it should look like, but it's in God's perfect time frame. And that's a timing that is within our whole lifetime. So thank you, everyone. I would like to now call up probably one of my closest friends, Jenny Rowe, who's an outstanding mother. She's an inspiration to me in so many ways. I get to work alongside her sometimes at EVU Chelsea, the best real estate place if you ever want to go and buy a house or rent a property. A remarkable woman, incredibly hardworking, beautiful homemaker, mother, and gives me great pleasure to hand over to her. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. The definition of Mother's Day, a time to honour the powerful maternal bond that connects mother and child and celebrate the influence of mums on us as individuals. Good morning, everyone. Happy Mother's Day to all that we call or see as a mother or a mother figure. This morning, Scott said to me, "Who's going to empty the dishwasher this morning?" And I go, "It's Mother's Day, Scott." I said, "It's not Scott Rowe Day." So, but do you know what? I'm a mother, so I actually emptied the dishwasher. But I should have left it, seriously. So today is Mother's Day, so I have an excuse to talk about, not that I need an excuse, my two very independent daughters. And I've got a photo of them here, as long as that's working. There they are. My husband and I, and we're not perfect parents, and certainly they are not perfect children, even though our eldest daughter would, you know, question that, she'd beg to differ. She's a bit of a character. Lots of people say there's no rule book to parenting, but I read somewhere that if we view our role through the lens of God's grace, we will see that the gospel must first shape how we parent before we can effectively shape our children. Psalm 127, 3-5 says, "Parenting is one of God's most important callings. Children are a gift and a blessing from God." Our eldest is Madeline and youngest Charlotte. They are cute, aren't they? They're beautiful, they're smart, they love life, and they definitely took after me. Oh, actually, I wrote on here, sans tacky, so leave that out. So sorry about that. They are successful in their career paths they have chosen. Mads is a radio announcer at Nova in Brisbane, and she can be heard across Australia on Sunday, and she's been just given her own Oz music show. So Charlotte has her own real estate agency in Swan Hill, EVU. It's a part of EVU. Scott and I both work for EVU, and she's taking on the big agencies up there and doing well. Growing up, we encouraged them to forge their own paths. They both asked for help with their homework, and we usually refused. Sorry. On a few occasions, they asked for us to sign their diaries because they hadn't completed their assignments, saying they were unwell or some crazy excuse, of which we also refused. But certainly questioned, how long have you had this assignment for? A few weeks? Well, definitely we won't be signing your diary. There is no excuse. They quickly learnt that we weren't going to help. Of course we did if it was warranted. We wanted them to take responsibility for their actions. We wanted them to... Oh yeah, I'm sure occasionally they forged our signatures, but that certainly is another story. I genuinely believe this is just one of the things that help us in them in their lives to be the women that they are, independent women. They both did well at school, and both applied to uni, Madeline to do journalism and Charlotte psychology. Both deferred, but they chose different paths that they are very successful in. I remember, when they were little, dealing with tantrums in the supermarket when I refused to buy whatever was at eye level. And of course, mothers know, what's at eye level? Lollies. When they were old enough to earn their own pocket money, it was very interesting to see that they just quickly decided they didn't need those lollies because they had to buy it for themselves. So, we've certainly, brought them up to be good savers and make wise financial decisions. They have very financially savvy grandmothers and great-grandmothers, and I've got a photo of my mother and both my grandmothers. There they are. So there's my mum on her wedding day, and we got married in the same church, so that was really lovely. They have built property and share portfolios, and I stole a line from a speech at the Dawn service, and yes, it's about men and women who have fought for our country, but our grandparents fought to leave an inheritance for us. The line is, their sacrifice is our inheritance. In saying all this, it came as a surprise this week to receive a text message from one of my daughters one night. Different mobile number, but oh well, I read it to you. "Hey Mum, at the petrol station and my car's not working. Any chance you can transfer $150 to this account? BSB 725100, account 100265651. Thanks Mum, call soon." As a mother, what is my first instinct? They're at the petrol station, it's late, it's dark, they have no money, are they safe, are they okay? Also, that's a lot of petrol for a small car. Are they buying, Scott's favourite lolly, pythons? Seriously, you call them and they're Action Mobile. You can't get through, you text them, no answer. As mothers, we are nurturers, we are carers. Without a second thought, we just transfer the money. Done. Scott's looking at me thinking, did she actually transfer money? No. you know, okay, obviously I know it's a scam and I didn't transfer the money. It's okay. But I started to think about, what if a mother didn't realise and was worried their child was in trouble? As mothers, we want our children to be safe. Doesn't matter if they're 10 or if they're 50, we want to protect them. What if I was estranged from my child and suddenly out of the blue they had contacted me for money? What would I think? What would I do? But then I started thinking, how does God feel when we are only crying out to him when we need something? He longs for a relationship with us. He doesn't just want to hear from us when we are in trouble. He actually cares about us every single day and just everyday stuff. Isaiah 49:15 says, "But how could a loving mother forget her nursing child and not deeply love the one she bore? Even if a mother forgets her child, I could never, never forget you. Can't you see I've carved your name on the palm of my hands?" Unfortunately, every mother is flawed. Even if we think we are perfect and can do no wrong, even the best of mothers can fail. But the Lord will never forsake us. The tender goodness and loving kindness of the Lord is unchanging and unchangeable. His generous grace and great mercies are for all time and throughout eternity. Psalm 36, 5 to 7 says, "But you, O Lord, your mercy seat is limitless, reaching higher than the highest heavens. Your great faithfulness is infinite, stretching over the whole earth. Your righteousness is unmovable, just like the mighty mountains. Your judgments are as full of wisdom as the oceans are full of water. Your tender care and kindness leaves no one forgotten, not a man or even a mouse." Oh God, how extravagant is your cherishing love. All mankind can find a hiding place under the shadow of your wings. And also I love this version from the Message Bible. God's love is meteoric. His loyalty astronomic. His purpose titanic. His verdicts oceanic. Yet in his largest, nothing gets lost. Not a man, and there's the mouse again, not a mouse, slips through the cracks. How exquisite your love, O God. How eager we are to run under your wings, to eat our fill at the banquet you spread, as you fill our tankards with Eden spring water. And I looked up Eden spring water, and yes, it's from God's garden. It's only the best. How lovely. You're a fountain of cascading light and you open our eyes to light. In closing, yesterday I was at the shopping centre. There were so many dads there buying, you know, for their mothers. The kids are so cute. You know, how about this, Dad? How about this, Dad? You know, smell this candle, Dad. And I was smelling them too and I'm thinking, ooh, that's not good. But do you know what? You know, we love candles and we love flowers. But the candles will burn out eventually and the flowers will wilt. We still love them, but God's love never goes out.